The first question comes from the line of Andreas Venditti from Vontobel. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Good morning from my side as well. A couple of questions. In the auto business, you did quite well. That was a good achievement. We have now, I think, a new entrant as a market entrant, as a partner for Tesla, which is Swissquote. Can you comment on anything that you see in terms of impact on the market from this new entrant? Second one, maybe if you can comment on your expectations or what you see for the new IKEA partnership, which I think is going to be launched in March. What do you expect there? I guess you also had costs for the project, possibly or likely already in 2020. Maybe you can quantify that. Also in terms of the SME, obviously it's on hold. What's the outlook there? When do you plan a relaunch? And also, do you think there's any changes in the business case compared to pre-COVID for this business? And finally, maybe an outlook on the yields for the three businesses. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andreas. Almost all questions from me, but the last one I can at least give to Pascal, but I will try to answer the first one. So the first question was about Swissquote and the entrance of a new leasing company there together with Tesla. Look, Tesla has big plans to grow their market share in the market, and they need more partners, though. I mean, they cannot rely on one or two partners. So I think it's logical that they have a cooperation with another partner. I think three partners is fine. I don't think, though, you can have only one partner. I don't know what the effect is going to be now. I mean, we are still with Tesla on the commercial side. We are planning to have a loan product with Tesla as well. We did great volumes in last year. Tesla will continue to grow, in my view. I mean, they're in a good shape. They have new models coming out. There will be another player in the market, but I mean, for you, it's completely fine, no? Because this is the market practice. On the IKEA partnership, the second question, I'm personally excited, you know. I don't want to raise expectations that it's going to be, you know, that everything is going to be fantastic on day one. However, they have 1.7 million family members in IKEA, and we're going to target those family members to get them to a credit card. We also have Swiss Billing in there. We're also going to have some other products there. Cards Mobile First, what's going to be live in the second half of the year, will be first used for our IKEA customers and then for other customers. So I think over time, and again, I'm hesitant to give you a number right now because I don't even know when the shops are opening again. So, but over time, I think it's a huge opportunity for us. It's much bigger than Conforama or Fnac. It's not as big as Migros, of course, but 1.7 million family members with an extremely good brand, I think, gives a very good opportunity for Cembra. Hesitant to give you any numbers, Andreas, and I think you understand that. On the SME, the third question, look, the day almost that we launched the SME business, we had a nice competitor in the market, it was called Government. You know, they overflowed the market with loans with no interest and no amortization for 5 years. I think that provided a lot of liquidity in the market, and I think the liquidity is still there. So I think it would be wrong to relaunch SME right now. I think on midterm, I still believe in SME. I think it's a very good value proposition. It's completely online. I don't think the first 6 months in this year when we launch it. It's probably too early. And I think after the summer we have to see how the world is changing, how the world is developing. So it might possibly be possible that we launch in the second half, maybe even a bit later. But for the moment, I will be very, I know Volker, I think, is agreeing with me there. I will be very restrictive in doing SME launch because I think there's still a lot of liquidity in the market. Then the fourth question was an outlook on the yield. Pascal, you want to say a few words? Yeah.
So first, in 2020, as we have been able to defend our pricing strategy despite the COVID situations. Of course, you would like to keep the overall yield so stable also in 2021, but I think we need to be much more agile than in the past to see also what could be the impact of COVID and assess on a regular basis.
But I think maybe in addition to this one, we really defended the yield in 2020, and for me, it's the right thing to do. So I don't think we're going to trade heavily priced for assets, no. That's not in our DNA. We have never done this. and I don't see that happening in 2021. I think yield is very important for us. I hope that answers all your questions, Andreas.
Yes, thank you very much, Robert, and all the best from my side.
Thank you, Andreas. Thank
you. For the future.
Yeah, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Andreas Brun from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you. I've got four questions. The first one, did you release the additional loan loss provisions made in H1? Then the second one, you showed that net financing receivables during lockdowns came down on your sites. Does this hold true also for the current year for 2021 so far? And then two questions on the credit cards. Could you please elaborate on the growth of the number of cards? It was 5% versus 10% in the last couple of years. Is this only due to COVID, or is there also a general downtrend in demand? And then the second one on the credit card, if one would adjust for FX-related fees, which are not there currently, do you see pressure on fees per card in general, and especially in Switzerland? That's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Andreas. I will give the first question to Volker, then I take two and three, and the fourth one I'm giving to Pascal. So on the release loan loss provisions, Volker?
Yeah, the quick answer is no. And just kind of to give a bit of context, so in the first half, we booked an additional reserve, which we still have. At the end of the year, it was 2.2 million, which is something that we called an environmental reserve, which we booked on T-loans, to be prepared for any kind of effect that a macroeconomic downturn might show that we would have not captured in our standard reserving models. But we're also there, we run a very prudent approach. We didn't see the need to release it because it's still in a macroeconomic situation that is fragile, so we keep it and have it.
Okay. Andreas, could you just repeat your second question? I'm not sure if I completely captured it.
On your slides, you showed that net financing receivables during periods of lockdowns came down. They were negative versus the periods during summer. And my question is if this holds true year to date in 2021 as well.
We are again in
lockdown. So can we expect that during phases of lockdowns, it's still on the negative side?
It's difficult to say. It's a good question, but it's difficult to say. What we see so far, but we're only 8 weeks into the new year now, is that application levels on personal loans and auto are much better than they were in the first lockdown last year. So we seem to deal better as a country with this lockdown. What we saw basically in 2020 that we had a sharp drop in personal loan applications and in auto applications in March, April, May. We have a bit of a drop this year in January, February, but it's much lower than we had last year. So I can't answer your question. What I see is our auto business is basically almost continuing as normal. It's a little bit lower at the moment. It's only 8 weeks, so I don't know what's going to happen the next 3, 4, 5 weeks. I can't tell you, but that's what I say. In general, I think on the card side, it's very clear that when you have much lower volumes, you get lower assets, and when the volumes come up, the assets pick up. But that's much more fluctuation there. Your third question was on the credit cards and the growth on the numbers of cards, which was 5% last year. I think it's mainly due to COVID. I think if you look at the cards growth, normally we are about 10%, and I think there was really a slowdown on COVID. Also, we're going to launch IKEA, so I expect also some credit cards there, but it's difficult to say how much it's going to be in this year, but I think the 5% was really driven by COVID measures. The FX adjustment, Pascal?
Yeah.
Credit cards.
So obviously when we refer to international revenues in card business, this is of course on one side of the pure FX markups we have, but this is also related to the international interchange fees, where you might know that actually the are higher than the domestic fees. We see the pressures on the fees on the margin, like we have seen for many years. There are new market entries, so there are new some strategic moves. But on the other side, though, we have been always able to offset with some further growth of our business, and this is what we plan to do. This is what we are doing. So we have announced the corporations with IKEA Switzerland as an example, and this is how we want to basically offset potentially the lower fees and commissions with higher growth.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
We now have a question from the line of Benjamin Goy from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, good morning. Two questions from my side, please. First, on loan growth, just wondering, will we see a recovery only in H2 given the broader macroeconomic recovery, or do you think it's already sufficient when lockdowns are lifted in H1 to see somewhat of a volume recovery? And then secondly, you commented, at least on some trends in 2021 on the yield. I was wondering if you have any thoughts on the potential entry of Post Finance into lending amid their privatization plans and your impact and the impact on Cembra, or why you are more defensive maybe. Thank you.
Yes, Benjamin, thanks for your questions. I think I will take them both. First of all, the loan growth, what we see is that people are very cautious and people are waiting to spend the money and to go out. The savings rate went up significantly in 2020. People are very cautious. Personally, I think that whenever we get out of lockdown, people want to go traveling, people want to go spend money, and people also need loans. So I guess that the loans will pick up as soon as we are really out of lockdown and people can start traveling again. That's where you will see, in my view, spending in the market, and that will also have an effect on loans. How much it's going to be, I cannot tell you, but my personal expectation is that it will not be only in a half year, depending, you know, when we have really loosened the measures, it will start happening. Your question on Post Finance, I don't see any impact there. I think if Post Finance will be in finance, it will probably maybe more in mortgages than in personal loans. Also, so I don't think that's going to have any impact on us. I might be wrong, but I think I'm right. So I don't see them as a competitor. So I don't feel any impact from their entrance in the 21. Market.
Thank you, and all the best, Robert.
Thank you, Benjamin.
The next question comes from the line of Mate Nemes from UBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for the presentation and good morning. I have three questions, please. Firstly, just a follow-up on the year-to-date applications for personal loans, autos, and perhaps cards as well. I'm just wondering, have you seen any change in terms of the quality of applications, and if you could perhaps compare the acceptance rate of these applications currently versus pre-COVID, and has there been any change from this perspective? And secondly, a question on cost base, perhaps for Pascal. Would it be possible actually to discuss the main moving parts of the cost base going into 2021? Shall we expect actually further decline, for example, in professional service fees, and maybe any major change on the IT expenses line? And lastly, a question, a broader question, maybe for Robert. Do you see an increased threat from buy now, pay later solutions in Switzerland, as some of the large retailers started offering these payment solutions? Is that a credible large medium-term threat? And if so, what can you do, what are you doing to mitigate that? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Marta. I think we all have a question here. So I think the first one is for Volker. The applications.
Yes, when it comes to the quality of the year-to-date applications, also here the short message is there is no significant change over time. And I think this is also something that we have been showing in the past when we looked into the distribution of consumer ratings, that we are very consistent in our risk appetite, and when necessary, we change a bit here and there to ensure the stability of the loss rate. When it comes to the through-the-door population, also there, as mentioned, customers are cautious, but it doesn't give a big shift in the customer profile that is applying for loans. So overall, there is no big movement that we see, not only in year-to-date, but also basically in the last year.
Pascal on cost base.
Yeah. So on the cost base, so first I will say a few words on the cost and then on the cost ratio, on the cost-income ratio. On the cost side, if you look at our compensations and benefits, so it's clear that we have taken some measures and ultimately realized the synergies in the context of Cashgate. So we are pleased with that. You mentioned the questions of IT, and obviously we see some increase of IT from 31 to 39 million. Look, this is one post where I wouldn't expect to fundamentally change. So in the context of digitization, in the context of COVID, so if there is a line where I would expect even more spend going forward, this is this line. So it's the acceleration in the digitalization to enable a better customer experience. And on the professional services, also linked ultimately with project we have, wouldn't expect too much changes. So we are feeling that actually quite comfortable with the cost in total. Obviously, the challenge is more the ratio, because there are a lot of uncertainties around the revenue side, and at which point the economy will recover. Our long-term aspirations remain unchanged. We said, also in the context of Cashgate acquisitions, we would like to be at 44 or even below. But by when can we achieve this? It's something which is difficult to estimate now.
Yes, on the buy now pay later, it's an interesting thing now. I mean, Volker knows it very well because he was in the Nordics for a long time, and Nordics have been very popular. First of all, we have buy now pay later. So on our credit card, we can do buy now pay later. We've done some of the tests with Conforama. And in general, I would say that the Swiss market is not very very eager to do this. I know now in Australia it's having a revival. A lot of retailers doing it. I think if people want to do it, we can do it. We could do it for IKEA. We could do it for our retailers. In general, I've never seen it being a big success in Switzerland. We tried it also about 10 years ago in this business to really do a buy now pay later product. It never worked very well. So we are able to do it. So if it's coming very popular, we will do it. But so far, I don't see the trend moving into the Swiss market to buy now pay later. Does that answer your questions, Pater?
Absolutely, it does. Thank you very much, Robert, and I wish you all the best in the future.
Thank you, Mata.
The next question comes from the line of Daniel Regli from Octavian. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. I have one follow-up question to Mate's question and then four other questions, if I may. First, on the cost, in the cost measures you have taken after or the realization of synergies with Cashgate, is there everything already visible in the H2 2020 number, or shall we see some further realization of the benefits you have, the measures you have taken? And then I have two questions on page 5, where we see the monthly trends in the receivables. First, maybe on personal loans, compared to the other two businesses, personal loans seem to depreciate or go down quite consistently over the year, whereas in auto leasing and cards, we clearly see, let's say, the impact of the lockdown or lockdowns, if you want. Can you maybe elaborate a bit what is the difference in nature that we see this kind of consistent decline with personal loans but not on the other two businesses? And then secondly, maybe also looking a little bit on the cards number and the dynamics on the yield or interest income on the different businesses. Is this, let's say, slight pickup we have seen in gross yield, meaning net interest income divided by average receivables, mainly driven, let's say, because of the monthly average being above the simple average between beginning of period and end of period in H2, or were there other dynamics? I think you hinted to it when you were talking about the rates changes with non-interest yielding business on your balance, if you just could elaborate a bit more on this. Then quickly on loan loss provisioning, I think you already talked about it, but can you give me kind of an idea or an indication on what you are modeling for in terms of pickup in default rates going into 2021? Because I would assume that when all these government support measures are running out, we should see an increase of default rates, particularly for, let's say, smaller businesses. What are you already modeling in, and yeah, what would you, or what could you take wrong-footed on the provisioning? And then the last question regarding partnerships and, let's say, more general or strategic outlook going forward. Where do you see opportunities to further expand your business? Is there are there businesses you could imagine Cembra doing which you don't do yet, and what kind of partnerships are left after you're having, let's say, Migros, IKEA, and a lot of others? Are there many other companies you could work together left?
Okay, Daniel, if you keep asking questions, we lost the first one almost, but we'll go for it.
Sorry.
Pascal, that's it, yours.
Yeah, I take it as the first one, although Daniel, obviously H1, although was we had although the integrations cost, and majority of the integrations cost, as I mentioned, of 8 million was in H1. I would say the majority of for H2, the majority of the synergies from the Cashgate acquisitions and the actions we have taken are already visible in the H2 numbers.
So on the pre-loan assets, your second question, why there's a difference with auto, I think in general, I think this is a trend what you see in crises like this. People are just very cautious now. So people don't take loans at the moment. We saw very low attrition, very low volumes on the applications. I think it's getting a little bit better this year, but I think people are just waiting. People have the money. People are saving the money. That's also why you see the savings quote. And people are just waiting to go out again and to spend money again. So they don't want to spend money. The restaurants are partly closed. The holidays, people don't need money for this kind of things. I think auto is different because I think people just want to avoid public transport and people want to invest in cars. And that's what you clearly saw on the used car. The used car market was basically unchanged last year. So it was, you know, the new car market was really, you know, stopping for a while, also because the industry stopped for a while. But used car market, people want to have transport, though, and transport is something that people are not going to save on, in my view. So, look, I expect P-loans market to pick up. I always said, though, if you know, for the ones who have been more years with us, that, you know, P-loans is a very stable market. The you know, and you have good years and bad years. And we had a couple of good years, and now we have a bit of a bad year. Oh, it will come back, and then it's the day now. But if you look at the long-term trend on personal loans, the asset base is quite stable in the market. On the cost dynamics, I think on the yield one, there are so many influential factors there. I think you should stick to, you know, more or less the yield that we have in 2020. There's always some ups and downs there. It's very difficult to explain it into detail. If you want, we can have a separate call afterwards with Marcus to talk about it a bit more in detail. But I think for this call, we would get a very technical discussions, and I think we would probably lose most of the audience here. Volker, the loan losses, there was a fourth question from Andreas, from Daniel, sorry.
Yeah, thanks for the question on the losses. It's actually a bit of a million-dollar question when it comes to the expectation for the futures, when it comes to a potential pickup of default rates, because this risk would not only exist for 2021, it would also have existed for 2020. And what we did at that time is that we basically took countermeasures. So the exposed segments we identified, and we're a bit tighter on the underwriting in these segments and also kind of more focused on our collections activities to ensure the stability over time. And that was actually also the reason why we took this environmental reserve of 2.2 million that we still carry on the balance sheet. So if we would come into a situation which would be an unexpected increase in default rates, we would have booked the reserve already this year.
On the partnership, Pascal, you want to say some words?
Look, of course, we are keen to sign additional partnerships. We always said one to two other partnerships would be nice. We have a permanently as a pipeline we are looking at. So we cannot win all every time that we offer. But this is clearly as a part of our strategy to try to sign more partnerships in the future. particularly in cards, but also in auto or even though in pillow.
But maybe I can give you a little bit more color on this, because I think, you know, the fact that we bought this billing is paying off, because I think retailers are all under pressure in the market. You know? They need to do more on customer loyalty, and they need to capture the customers more and more. I think one of the reasons we won IKEA was IKEA never wanted to do a credit card, but now I think they move. We spoke about 5 years, I think, with them. I think retailers need more loyalty. They need payment solutions as well. So I think with the combined offering Swiss Billing, Chinbra, and also having the opportunity to give loans and leases in there, I think there is a good side for more retailers in the future. Are we going to sign every year new Migros? No. But I think IKEA is a great brand to sign. And I think there are more opportunities in the market. So, you know, it's always a matter of, you know, is the hand half full or half empty? But there's a good pipeline, and we'll be building further on this business. Is becoming more and more a cards business now. If you look in the last couple of years, it's less a personal loan business, more and more cards business. We're over 1 million cards now, and the revenue stream on cards is getting more and more important for us. So, yes, we are very interested in signing more partnerships.
Thanks, very clear. Maybe just one follow-up on, let's say, adjacent businesses. Obviously, a couple of years ago, you've bought the Swiss Billing, which was basically a new business, but leveraging your existing capabilities and platform. Are there other businesses which you're currently not doing, but you could imagine Chamber to do going forward?
I think this is more of a strategic discussion that we can have, but I don't think we have the time, because this is going to be an answer of about 10 minutes for me if you really want to get into detail. So I'm happy to take you through it a little bit afterwards now, in a one-on-one, whatever, if you want to, or Pascal can do this. But this is more a strategic question for the – I think, yes, there are some adjacent businesses, but there's also some timing effects there that we have to look at. I think for the rest, at the moment, we should really focus on recovering at the current business and building out the cards business. This is the priority for 2021 for Chamber.
Okay, very clear. So thanks a lot. I would appreciate, let's say, if we could just take this offline and
– Absolutely, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel.
All the best. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Nicolas Berkey from Mirabaud. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you very much for holding this conference. Currently, the theme is reflation and higher interest rate. Can you please remind us what are your levers on both sides of the interest income? So, on pricing, I don't remember the exact parameters with which the ceiling works. And then on the funding side, what are the levers? Are you tempted to go with longer bonds or something like that currently to protect future yields, please? Thank you very much.
I'll give you a quick view on the how the system works, and Pascal gives you the view on the funding side. So how the interest rate works in Switzerland is there's a 3 months short-term interest rate, and there is a 10% upside there for loans and 12 for cards. So you can increase basically 10% for loans and 12 for cards. The floor is zero. So if interest rates are negative, it's still zero. If the interest rates, short-term interest rates are, and the measurement is every year in September, if the interest rates are above zero, at 50 basis points, you can basically have, you know, 50 basis points plus 10% and 50 basis points plus 12%. Every year the measurement is in September. I don't think it's going to change a lot. I think we will be at the current interest rates of the max interest rates of 10 and 12% for a while. You want to say a few words about funding?
A bit high level, but ultimately we are prudent as well in our asset and liability as a management. Duration 2.7 is on the funding side, as always, not too far from our contractual durations we have on the asset side. So no, we don't have the tactical measures to change from this approach. For us, though, the asset liabilities matching is always something that we try otherwise to look at. So we are fine with the current durations.
Thank you very much.
We now have a follow-up question from the line of Andreas Venditti from Vontobel. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. Just two smaller items. On the slides, you mentioned
the Eni Corporation, which had a 2% impact from reduced activity, you say, and I'm surprised by the size. 2% impact for this corporation seems to me quite large. So maybe you can explain what's going on there. And the second one, maybe Swiss Billing is growing very nicely. Maybe you can explain a bit where this comes from and where we might be heading in terms of Swiss Billing growth for September. Thank you.
Yeah, on Eni, we had a SPV with Eni. So, and we don't have a lot of volumes coming into the SPV. They are now to an agent agreement with us. So the agent agreement, we still get the volume. So it's not booked in the SPV anymore. Basically, we don't book a lot of volumes anymore in the SPV. So then, if you know that the portfolio has a three-year run rate, then it goes down pretty quickly. We still work with them on an agent basis. So we still book volumes with them on an agent basis, which is not booked in any anymore, but just in Cembra. On the Swiss Billing side, I think Swiss Billing is doing two things nicely. First of all, they are doing billing as a service. So that's what they had some big corporations there. And also, I think on the IKEA side, they're growing. So I think they're getting profitable. They're getting profitable really this year. I think they're growing nicely. I think they have a good value proposition, and we have good expectations. Is it going to be significant for 21? No. But I think Swiss Billing is also incremental in getting businesses for us. I mean, the IKEA deal, it was great that we had Swiss Billing because they are really needed for this kind of retailer. So in my view, Swiss Billing pays for itself only by helping us with IKEA. But also on their own, they are profitable, they're growing nicely, and we have very good expectations for them. It's not going to be a significant event in 21.
Thank you.
Good. I think we're running a bit over time, so I think we should finalize it here. I think also there are no more questions. So I would thank you for listening into the call. To all the analysts, I think most of us have been there for many, many years. So I want to personal thank you, all the analysts, that you've always been very fair to us, critical but very fair and very detailed. So thank you for the great cooperation. I hope you can have the same cooperation with Holger. I think so. You will have the same cooperation with Holger. Then you will ask Pascal and Volker to continue with you. So I think it will be business as usual. Thank you for listening in, and I wish you all the best. Thank you.